We are now recording.
Okay. BTR session is back in order. Kirk, can you do a roll call, please?
Mr. Gilmore?
Present.
Dr. Campbell?
Here.
Mr. Kolenka?
Here.
Ms. Hovig?
Here.
Ms. Lindgren?
Here.
Mr. Nesgood?
Here.
Mr. Sales?
Present.
Mr. Wilson?
Here.
Ms. Skanky?
Here.
Hey, we have a quorum.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, we've just come back from our executive session, and I'd like to give Mr. Harrison direction. Can I get a motion from the board? I can do it. Mr. Harris, thank you for your input, but I'd like to, on behalf of the board, make this motion to continue to make reasonable efforts to resolve the matter and proceed.
To direct our legal counsel to proceed as discussed in executive session.
Yeah. I have written down most of that, actually. I might not have gotten it correct, but Mr. Harris, thank you for your input, but we have this motion to have you continue to give us assistance. Can I get a second?
Mr. Chair, I'd make a motion to second. Mike Kolenka.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Campbell? Mr. Campbell, we need a vote.
There was some background noise all of a sudden there. Aye.
Thank you. Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Stanky?
Aye.
Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Okay, we have a unanimous vote. Thank you, Mr. Harris.
Thank you very much. And I'd like to thank John Alejandro for being a part of this discussion and having the chance to answer your questions this morning.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's move into our enforcement. Mr. Hackall is here first. Sure.
I just had our investigator Dan back to my office to get the plan.
Okay. All right. Can I put you on hold, Mr. Hack, for a minute or two? We have some of this we can go ahead Okay, we're going to take the next item is going to be Mr.
Schwagel.
We would like to give a presentation on traffic engineering.
Agenda item
8B. Please come forward.
All right. So we want to get the gals who are in the audience out of the way. They're here for enforcement matter.
I'm so sorry. I just asked Dan to.
Okay.
Ready?
All right. So in your packet tonight, included anything and everything you want to know and possibly not know about traffic engineering. My name is David, D-A-V-I-D, Schwagel, S-C-H-W-B-G-E-L, from Phelps Engineering Services. I actually live in Clovis, California, and work in Reno, Nevada, 319 miles away. And so what that means is that the struggling California high-speed rail project hits home quite closely to me, in that I have a choice of either a 5-hour drive or a 9-hour plane flight. So the ask for the board is to first off consider licensing traffic engineers in the state of Arizona, and second off to send a letter, and we need a total of 10 state boards to do this, to NCEES to consider licensing, or offering a traffic engineering licensing examination. So traffic engineering, by definition, is the planning, design, and operations of infrastructure systems carrying people and products across diverse modes, including roadways, airways, pathways, waterways, etc. Now, the distinction between traffic engineering and civil engineering in roadways is that civil would refer to the curb, gutter, sidewalk, grading, and drainage systems, those items that are permanently attached, whereas traffic would refer to those elements that regulate the flow of people and products, namely the signing, striping, street lighting, traffic signals, and interconnection systems that regulate the flow of people and products. Now, when it comes to the protection of the public health, safety, and welfare, a couple points to note. 40,000 lives lost on our nation's roadways every year, and this number keeps increasing due to distracted and stressed out motorists. And those elements that are put into vehicles, those advanced electronics, they are intended to save lives. In a lot of respects, they actually produce a whole lot more distracted driving. For me personally, I remember spending 90 minutes trying to get Apple CarPlay to work properly. Luckily, I did not get into a crash, but unfortunately, that's what we're noticing with a lot of these systems, is that we have fatalities continuing to rise. We have COVID that has really wreaked havoc on fatalities, a whopping 40,000 lives lost every year on our nation's roadways. And then when it comes to the actual cost of traffic congestion on aviation and roadway systems combined, we're talking upwards of $200 billion a year, according to the Texas Transportation Institute. And then if you look at the American Automobile Association, when it comes to the actual cost of crashes, we're talking anywhere between $300 and $800 billion a year. Now, here's the kicker. Professionals in traffic engineering via a variety of pathways, including civil, electrical, and control systems. However, there are professionals who choose to specialize in traffic engineering who don't have the background in civil, electrical, mechanical control systems, that basically get shut out of the process, that get excluded from the professional engineer's table because currently NCAAs does not offer a licensing exam in traffic engineering. So, to my knowledge, only the states of Oregon and Massachusetts license traffic engineers as a regulated practice. However, in the absence of NCAAs not providing an exam specific to traffic engineering, in that absence, they have to come up with their own examination, which is a rigorous process. And Oregon sometimes questions, well, gee, is it really worth it given the lack of applicants? What we're trying to do is we want to give the people with the specialized knowledge in traffic engineering who enter traffic engineering via traffic engineering the opportunity to be at the professional engineer's table. What this will look like for the state of Arizona is we would perhaps have like countdown timers at vehicle signals and prepare to stop when amber flashing on the approach to those vehicle signals to significantly reduce the number of crashes. We would be able to rival Norway in terms of getting very close to Vision Zero. Vision Zero is an initiative by the Institute of Transportation Engineers and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration to get the number of vehicle fatalities from where it is currently now at 40,000 down to zero. We would be able to emulate a lot of the success stories like Norway and other European nations. We'd be able to save numerous lives. Now, Arizona, at least in the Phoenix area, has already done quite well from the design of the freeway system, but I did notice coming in this morning and yesterday, I actually drove about 600 miles to be here because I believe in the state of Arizona and the phenomenal advances you have made both in the design of your freeway system as well as your airport. Both are highly regarded among the best in the nation. But the ask is, if we can get more people at the professional engineers table who have specialized knowledge in traffic engineering, who can build on those systems and advance them so that they are state of the art, so that the world can look to Arizona as being the envy of the world for top-notch traffic engineering systems, that would be great. Meanwhile, we'd be able to save numerous lives. We'd be able to save billions of dollars, because traffic engineers, in a nutshell, make decisions that impact millions of lives and billions of dollars. So the asks, to repeat, are as follows. Ask number one, prepare a letter to NCWES in support of NCWES offering a traffic engineering licensing exam in addition to the exams that they already offer: civil, electrical, mechanical, agricultural, industrial, metallurgical, chemical control systems, environmental. And the second ask is to license traffic engineers in the state of Arizona. And I'm prepared to make the case before the legislature if you decide in favor of licensing traffic engineers in the state of Arizona. Questions, comments?
I have just something to add to the conversation for board members. Hayden did quite a lot of research back into our own statutes and branches of engineering, and he was able to identify that also, for those of you that know Leroy Brady, who's a former board member and on our Laws and Rules Committee, and he works for Arizona Department of Transportation and is a professional landscape architect. So he recalled that there were several people that gained highway experience that started out originally as land surveyors, and through their highway experience surveying in the 50s and 60s, all of that came about, it came to fruition somewhere, I think in the 70s, late 70s, that's when they eliminated highway engineering. So there was highway engineering that started out basically with land surveyors and their knowledge. They did have highway engineers. In late 79, they decided to incorporate it into civil engineering, and they did change legislation in 1980 so that there were there wasn't a designation for highway engineering anymore. It fell under civil engineering, and anybody that was left at that time that wanted to keep that designation, they were required to take part three of the NCWES civil engineering exam. And it was just really interesting to learn a little bit about the history of it, because we all love traffic issues, right? And so to me, traffic engineering makes a lot of sense. Board members, you may recall some months ago we were approached by an individual asking the board to submit a letter to NCWES asking for a professional plumbing engineering exam. And I actually have that in my report for later, but they have received enough of those requests from various states that it's going to be on the agenda for discussion at the annual meeting this week for NCWES. And just so you know, Mr. Schwegel, in Arizona, we do have branch-specific engineering, but we are kind of an anomaly. Most of the nation registers professional engineers and doesn't have the branch-specific. We do right now, but to do what you'd like to do, it would take legislative change and a rule package to be opened. So,
sure.
How is your support from Department of Transportation in Arizona?
I have corresponded with the Department of Transportation quite a bit on the I-11 project, as well as high-speed rail.
As far as this movement and recognition of traffic engineering?
They're supportive. Because one of the items that makes Arizona and Nevada unique is you're going to be the latest addition to the interstate highway system. I-11 going from Las Vegas to Phoenix, and then north to intersect Interstate 80, just north of Fallon, Nevada. And so that's another key reason that we want to really shine the light on Arizona when it comes to keeping traffic engineering. So it's not just highway, but we're talking specifically the regulation of people and products, those elements Now, the Institute of Transportation Engineers has a professional traffic operations engineer licensing exam, but that is intended as a title authority within a given branch of engineering. But what we want to do is we want to bring people to the table with specialized knowledge in traffic engineering, as the NCAAS currently does not license a traffic engineer, or does not have a traffic engineering licensing exam, and then only Oregon and Massachusetts actually license traffic engineers. In the state of Oregon, there's a lot of fruit. Oregon was identified as the best state in the nation for driving. And if you look at the top-notch professionals in the Institute of Transportation Engineers, Oregon is extremely well represented, and Portland is widely regarded among the traffic engineering community as a city that did everything right. So I definitely coordinate with the Oregon board and find out their, what they see as the merits and drawbacks. And I think the NCAAS licensing exam could potentially fill in that void.
Is NCAAS, are they supportive of creating an exam for traffic engineers?
I approached them and they said, we need to get 10 states on board.
Right.
And the state of Washington basically was the one that told me that that magic number is 10. I've increased that number to 11 because my the president and CEO, Lonnie Phelps of Phelps Engineering Services, wants Idaho on board. And so I'm going to be approaching the Idaho board as well as the Nevada board, in addition to the remaining boards, which are Massachusetts, New York, Florida, Washington, Oregon, California, Florida, etc., and Utah.
I thought California did have traffic engineers.
Okay, here's the kicker about California. It is a title act, not a regulated practice. California is much worse off having traffic engineer as a title act than not having traffic engineer at all. One of the reasons why the California Department of Transportation, Caltrans, is the worst performing DOT in the nation, given the metric that matters, efficient use of taxpayer funds, is because while other states are actually out there building roadways, at Caltrans there's a lot of turf wars between supervising civil engineering egos and sound traffic engineering judgment. And the egos tend to trump the judgment. And so I've honestly been working for 2 decades on trying to get traffic upgraded for title practice in California, and I'm continuing to work on it. But I feel if the neighboring states and other states throughout the nation license traffic engineers as a regulated practice, it will encourage California to get us act together. As I like to say, California struggles, Arizona comes to the rescue. Sacramento, by the way, is very grateful for Barry Bloom. He turned around a very difficult economic situation in Sacramento. So, Arizona has helped out California in a lot of great ways.
And Oregon and Massachusetts that recognize professional engineer, traffic
yes.
engineering. So what exam are they currently
so
taking?
They are either preparing their own exam or they can use California's exam.
Okay.
But California is different from the remaining 49 states. They have their own manual and uniform traffic control devices. Under this proposal, the states will have the option of offering 2 specialty, 2.5 hour examinations on the next day covering traffic engineering practices specific to the state. Like, for example, Arizona could cover traffic engineering elements as it relates to design of freeways and design of airports, given your heavy reliance on aviation and the construction of the new I-11. And then the state of Washington, they might have the marine systems and international border crossings, because Washington actually has more in common with the Canadian province of British Columbia than any of the remaining 49 states, because they're very heavily impacted by the large Canadian cities just over the border. And then, of course, high-speed rail. I can go on and on about high-speed rail, but feel free to read the article that was published in ITE from September 2018 about why traffic engineers are missing from the high-speed rail conversation and what we need to do about it. We have like major talking points that traffic engineers need to validate that just are not being validated with regard to the high-speed rail systems. But one of the real benefits is it can better tie the economies of Phoenix and Tucson together. Phoenix seems to have a very healthy economy. Tucson, a little bit of a different story.
Okay.
Question, Mr. Vogel.
Yes.
So the FE exam would be the same, and it'd be the PE exam, but just modified for traffic?
It would be an NCWS exam specific to traffic engineering, yes. And then they could take the PTOE exam by the Transportation Professional Certification Board through the Institute of Transportation Engineers to get a title authority within traffic engineering itself.
Yeah,
so good. NCWS, they just need enough support from the states and industry to make the case. And the problem is that ITE is very much a silo. The Institute of Transportation Engineers, they are the primary authority on traffic engineering. They're too much of a silo. They don't interact with the other engineering fields as much as they perhaps should. And so we want to eliminate those silos as well. And I feel if we can eliminate the silos, then we can see salaries go up across the board, the public appreciation and prestige for the engineering profession will improve significantly. But the bottom line is we have to eliminate those silos. If you look at the article by Eva Kaplan-Meisterson from NSPE's PE magazine back in July, August 2007, entitled Consistency Mediocre, doctors and lawyers speak in terms of their specialties, whereas engineers speak in, well, doctors and lawyers, everyone knows what doctors and lawyers do because they speak in terms of their profession as a whole, versus engineers where they speak in terms of their specialties, and the public says, well, that's great, but what exactly does an engineer do? So by getting this distinct group of top-notch professionals who specialize in traffic engineering at the table, then we should be able to make a tremendous progress as far as unifying the engineering profession as a whole, because traffic engineers do deal an awful lot with the public, because traffic is the first thing that the public tends to complain about. Silo elimination, skill set expansion. And the idea is to get more states to license traffic engineers without having to go through the work of preparing traffic exam.
Okay. Thank you. You have a question?
Just one, but since it was related to the PTOE and such, are they, is that?
That's a title authority.
I know, but are they, have you discussed with them? It seems like this, if it were to occur, this new license would it remove the need for having other exam? Would they, are they duplicates?
It would increase the need for the PTOE, because that would be a title authority. The whole idea behind the PTOE is that it actually builds on a given license. Mm-hmm. And the only difference is that given license could be traffic engineering. And I do have a brochure on the PTOE that I can now hand.
Okay, yeah, no, I got all that
information. Oh, you have all that information?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I was just wondering how those two things were going to mesh and what the ultimate vision. So having both, they would still both.
Yeah, there would be an increased need for the PTOE. There would be more people taking the PTOE because you'd have more people at the professional engineer's table who are eligible to take the PTOE.
But okay, I understand. Yeah, because you have to have a certain number of years before you can take that one. And that
you have to have a back, and you have to have the right background in order to qualify for one of the exams.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I don't have any other questions.
Okay,
for sure.
Thank you for coming in and sharing your interest. Appreciate that.
And then what's the plan for voting on it? Or are you just going to deliberate, talk to the folks?
It won't happen today, obviously.
Okay.
But yeah, we've got some research by staff and folks can come back.
Mr. Sales and I can do some asking at the conference this week. And
is that San Diego, just out of curiosity?
Carlsbad.
Okay.
Hey, Judith. Mr. Chairman.
Who's speaking?
Hi, this is Ken. I did want to ask a question, Mr. Schweigel, if that's okay.
Sure.
Mr. Schweigel, first of all, thanks for driving all the way here, and sorry I couldn't be there in person today, but I did want to ask you, in your view, is there... obviously the intent of the board is to protect the safety and the public safety of our citizens in Arizona. But is there an abundance of people practicing traffic engineering without being licensed, without taking the PTOE or some other certification?
There are an abundance of people that are practicing traffic engineering. And then they need to get like a civil, electrical, or mechanical to sign off. because they're basically not able to come to the professional engineer's table because they don't have the background within the professional engineering discipline that's offered by their state board. So the problem is that leads to perhaps unqualified people stamping traffic engineering work products. And so we need to bring them to the table, and then we need to increase the number of people who are actually licensed to do traffic engineering work, and that will increase the number of PTO lead applicants. Did that answer your question?
I see, yes, yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
This is Colleen Lindgren. I have a question for Mr. Schweigel as well.
Yeah, please proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Schweigel, for chatting with us today. I'm curious if there are any specific incidents in Arizona that you're aware of where the lack of this registration or licensing created a problem. We've talked about distracted driving and technological advancements in cars and that kind of thing, which totally makes sense for, you know, accidents and all that kind of stuff. But are there specific incidents where we can say, oh, if there had been a licensed, you know, traffic engineer working on that project or dealing with this issue, like, we would have prevented something?
Okay, so in a nutshell, my drive in from Indio, California, because I have to go to the California Board meeting tomorrow in San Diego. My specific drive in, I noticed there was considerable traffic congestion. What a state-of-the-art, top-notch city that licensed traffic engineers would be able to do is be able to plan, design, and operate 110-mile-per-hour commuter rail systems so that you can park on the outskirts of the city outside of the traffic congestion zone and simply take the commuter rail into town, and you arrive much more relaxed. And honestly, this is it's a challenge in Phoenix because Phoenix is growing so quickly. Last I checked, it was like fifth, sixth largest city in the nation. It's also very spread out. You've essentially had the opportunity, though, to lay out your freeway system from a lot of respects from a blank canvas, whereas a number of the other places like Seattle have a lot of like inland waterways and narrow transportation right-of-ways. But specifically, it would have helped my drive-in considerably today if we had licensed traffic engineers and we had those systems in place to better regulate the flow of traffic coming in. Do check out the Texas Transportation Urban Mobility Report on the costs and where Phoenix ranks. Phoenix ranks fairly high. It's probably in the top 10, 15 of most congested cities in the nation. It's not quite as bad as the Seattle and Los Angeles, but it's definitely getting up there. And then check out the American Automobile Association and Google Vision Zero for opportunities to address the safety issues that, in a lot of respects, are far more costly than the congestion issues.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Mr. Plinko. Yes, this is Mike. Well, I know that when I'm usually going through a rezoning case or a major design review of any of my larger scale projects, a traffic report or a traffic statement is always something that the city will require us to provide. So in some ways, those services are just as important to my large scale projects as a structural engineer, landscape architect, you know, land surveyor and so forth. So there's definitely a demand for it. And it continues to grow as more and more cities are addressing traffic through traffic reports and traffic statements. So I appreciate your guys' work.
So you bring up a good point. Keep an eye on California. They have redefined the traffic studies now based on reducing the number of vehicle miles traveled. The significant impact is if it is greater than 85% of the total average vehicle miles traveled for a given area. So the idea is that we're trying to reduce the vehicle trip lengths to improve the quality of life, and we're initially trying to encourage other modes of transportation. The traditional zoning method basically held up the San Francisco Bicycle Master Plan in litigation for like a good decade. And so the vehicle miles traveled. The first major work product that was a product of the VMT was the Golden One Center in Sacramento, championed by former Senate President Pro Tem Daryl Steinberg in California. Any other questions?
Board members, any other questions for Mr. Schweigel?
Okay, hearing none.
This is Chief Pinky. It was more of just a comment for the record. It sounds to me like we are fishing for more professions to be regulating, and I do not think that is in our authority. And so I just wanted to make that statement known.
I think Mr. Schregel is asking for the board support to petition NCWS, the National Engineering Exam Association, to consider creating an exam for traffic engineering. But that wouldn't necessarily have any impact on our laws or rules in and of itself.
Okay, it sounded like this is something we were like looking to adopt in Arizona that we don't currently have, and I don't know that that's in our authority. We don't regulate the traffic engineer, and it sounds like we got rid of, you know, the traffic engineer or highway engineering already.
We recognize different branches of the engineering profession: electrical, civil, structural, got the whole list of them. And what we're talking about today is just creating another recognition just for traffic engineering. So we have the same pool of engineers and civils, just giving these guys an opportunity to identify themselves as having a discipline for traffic engineering.
I think today Mr. Schregel's just looking to see if the board would support sending the letter, just like we did for the plumbing engineers. Sorry, I can't remember the technical term for that. But anyway, we did send the letter, and there was multiple states that sent a letter saying that they would support NCWS creating that exam. But that didn't have anything to do. We don't have a plumbing engineer.
It doesn't mean we would recognize that. Arizona wouldn't recognize that. Someone could take a test.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that they'd be able to say that they're a traffic engineer.
That's like a whole
secondary conversation.
So we're just to focus on the NCWS issue for now, and then we can talk about logistically what it would mean for Arizona's licensed traffic engineers. You have the information on your packet, anything and everything you want to know about traffic engineering versus what you didn't want to know about traffic engineering. But I would focus on the NCWS issue for right now. And I still have several additional boards I need to reach out to, and I'm working on a presentation for Idaho right now.
Thank you.
Correct. Okay. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you. Safe travels.
Thank you.
Is it something that you want to think about, or?
I'm curious what NCS's position is, and let's see what they tell you guys, and maybe report next month.
Okay.
Do a little reconnaissance.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Do we have to agendize that?
Yes. So, thank you. Our legal counsel just pointed out that was agendized for presentation only today. Anyway, so there we go.
Very good.
Find out some more information and bring it back.
Okay. Should we do Mr. Hack?
And we have.
You want to do 7C1 first?
Well, we have some people in the audience. Is that 7C? What item number? Or
Charlie. 7C1. 7C1. Let's do 7C1. Okay, this is item 7C1. Case number is HI22-035. My glasses. The synopsis of this complaint: on April 25th, 2022, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent, after conducting a home inspection at 2458 North Wren's Nest Place in Tucson, Arizona, inaccurately reported that the outlets on the roof had GFCI protection but had no power. Inaccurately reported that no fan was installed in the water heater as required, and erroneously reported that there were signs of leakage on the floor by the adjoining wall to the laundry room, and made incorrect recommendations of repairs to the roof vent on the dryer and roof scupper. The details of the investigative inclusion is that the investigation concludes the respondent may have violated Board Statute ARS 32-128C4 as it relates to AAC R430-30101, and that respondent may have failed to conduct a home inspection in accordance with the standards of professional practice for Arizona home inspectors. During a home inspection conducted in Tucson, Arizona, based on three possible minor reporting deficiencies identified in respondent's home inspection report. Respondent was cooperative with this investigation and demonstrated a willingness to adhere to the Boards Practice Act. Okay.
We have respondent online as well.
We have a respondent online. Is it Guidor?
Gabor.
Mr. Gabor, are you online?
Yes. I can barely hear you, though, if you could speak into the mic.
I'll do what I can to make myself heard.
Well, that's it. I can hear you now. That's fine.
As the respondent here, can you give us a quick summary of your position on this case, please?
Sure. An investigation was done since March by Mr. I can't pronounce his name either. Daniel Cafel, I believe. And every item that was put in it, the complaint is by the seller, not the buyer. So the complaint basically is that I went beyond my scope by citing the evidence that was there. They hired a mold prevention people, drywall people, and they found mold. I didn't state that. I stated the fact that there was hidden damage. And all the items on our report were indicated by other professionals. So all that was found. The AAC, two people came and looked at my report and found that I had left certain items that didn't meet the state requirements, but found nothing wrong with the way I reported. So the AAC found that I didn't meet the state requirements by leaving out the word wood on a post. I said the post was new, but didn't use the word wood. So that's a violation. He also said that I don't have my name on my report or my contract. That is incorrect. They are on it, and the investigator also proved that. But the assessor said, "Well, it's on my contract. It's always been there." They also reported that I didn't talk about grading, but I say that there's no adverse impact on the structure. That's exactly what my report says, which is the same wording in the SOP. The assessment of 627 says it doesn't say there's wood, and that is true. I didn't say it was a wood post. I just said the posts were new. The supports and insulation, they stated as a deficiency. I say it's properly installed, as I've been saying for years. The assessor stated this condition is not required per 43, which is about overhead or underground. It's in styles of materials. I stated it was underground, and the material cannot be seen as it's installed underground as required by the standards. The assessor on page 79, report on vapor barrier, were required to report on the vapor barrier and condition thereof. My report says this area, this region of Arizona does not require a vapor barrier. In three locations throughout my report, I stated the walls and the ceilings are enclosed, and the condition of insulation could not be determined based on the construction type. But the assessor wrote down, well, if what? I mean, you can't see it. And that's my statement. I would like the board to dismiss the complaint, and the conduct does not warrant a letter of concern.
Okay, thanks for sharing your position on this. We have the ledger. Ms. Brown?
Yeah, and Punsky. It's Ann Brown Punsky. Thank you very much. Do you have questions, or would you just let me to...
No, I thanks for introducing yourself. I appreciate you coming in this morning.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me come in and listen to. Our complaint is really that he violated... There's two violations of the standards of practice, in that he didn't just say this should be investigated or this is important. He said this is the fact. And that led us down the rabbit hole that he talked a little bit about. But the point is, like, the work on the roof, where he said the water is doing this, the water is doing that, not any observable evidence of the water doing any of that, which I feel is really important to item 6.1 of the standards of professional practice, that says they shall observe roof jamming systems, which he did, but there was no observable evidence. So it was those kind of things. We had the, in the dining room, there was a piece of laminate that had sat under a heavy china closet and for 12 years. We moved it because the inspectors don't move heavy furniture. We moved it to make sure that he had access to it. What should have, in my opinion, what should have happened at that point was, this is a piece of laminate wood, certainly may be a water incursion. This needs to be investigated thoroughly. Instead of the whole little story about the going up, the coming down the roof through the dryer vent. So I really feel as though the statements were made as facts. They weren't made as a possibility.
Okay. Thank you for sharing your position. Mr. Cartel, can you share a staff position on this?
Sure. So obviously this is well beyond my expertise to make decisions on what should or shouldn't have been reported on or to what degree. Through fact-finding, however, though, I did look at the report. I noted that part of the allegation or part of the complaint was that a contractor had come in and verified that there was no water damage. I requested information to speak with that contractor. Ledger declined to provide that. I did reach out to the current owner. His statement was that there was water damage and it was corrected before he moved in. He didn't provide much more than that, though, so I reached out to his real estate agent. His real estate agent provided me with documentation from a mold and a mold inspecting company. The report that I got in that regards indicated that they did find, I believe it was moderate water damage within the wall and the presence of black mold. Although the real estate agent also provided a invoice for a company that cleans and dries material to get rid of the mold, and then also a contractor receipt for repairing the damage that was caused throughout that process. I included that in the packet that I sent out to assessors. I did put it out to two assessors. Both assessors found that the allegations listed in the complaint, they did not find merit in it. And when they looked through the rest of the report, they did find, I believe it was four reporting violations that they opined as minor. One of them was that the inspection agreement did not have Mr. Bavor's name and certification number on it. I looked at it myself and did find that it is there. I'm not an assessor, so but it is listed on the assessment, so that brings us down to three reporting violations. So the recommendation was their letter of concern to address those three reporting deficiencies. And again, I'm having to lean on the EAC committee members that did the assessments on whether those are legitimate issues or not. Mr. Bavor has another opinion on whether they're valid or not, but I really don't know. Happen to rely on the assessors on that case.
Very good. Thank you. Board members, any questions for our attendees? No questions. Well, Ms. Brown, thanks for coming in. We did have the EAC committee, and the peers, the other members of the committee who are home inspectors, evaluated the report, and they did not sustain the concern that you shared, but they did find other problems, apparently pretty de minimis. So that's why staff's coming up with a recommendation for letter of concern. So I guess if we have the support of the AC members who found that the report was actually pretty good, but there were some minor issues, then that's generally the approach we take. in making a decision here, and we rely on the investigative research by staff. So we have a recommendation for letter of concern, and I guess I'm not hearing anything yet that would want me to lead to a complete dismissal or pushing this up any higher.
And the letter of concern is one of the lower levels of addressing the issue.
That's right. Thank you, Mr. Kalika. This is the lowest form of discipline that we can issue as a board, is this letter of concern, except for dismissal.
Non-disciplinary.
Sorry. Right term. So if there's no other discussion, I guess I'd want to entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, this is
my Mr. Chair, oh, sorry.
Who's speaking?
I was told I was stepping over someone else. This is Ken Wilson, Mr. Chairman. I read through the report and through the documents, and I'm not sure that even the, you know, what the home inspector report has indicated is worthy of a letter of concern. Quite frankly, I would be supportive of just dismissing this case. You know, in the context of, again, protecting the public, it seems that the inspector erred on the side of caution in identifying some things that in his view were would protect the new owner possibly. So in that sense, I'm okay with dismissing the case.
Okay. Mr. Wilson, you want to make that a motion? Any other discussion first? Any of the board members want to discuss this? Okay, I think we're ready for a motion.
Okay, in that case, I will make a motion. This is Kent Wilson. We'll make a motion to dismiss this case.
Okay, this is Colleen Lester. Second that motion.
Okay, thank you. We have a motion to dismiss. We have a second. Let's do a roll call, Kurt.
Hey, Mr. Gilmore?
I'm going to say nay.
Mr. Kalika?
No.
Dr. Campbell?
Nay.
Ms. Opik?
Nay.
Mr. Nesgood?
No.
Mr. Sales?
No.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Skinke?
Aye.
Ms. Wilson?
Aye.
Motion fails.
Okay, we have a motion that did not was not approved. Can I get us another motion?
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Clegg. I'll make a motion to accept staff's recommendation issuing a letter of concern in the case of agenda item 7C1.
Okay, we have a motion to accept staff recommendation. Can I get a second, please?
A second.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Nesgood. We have a motion and a second to accept the staff recommendation for a letter of concern for case number HI-22-035. I'll say hey, Ms. Stein. Can I get a roll call, please?
Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Mr. Gilmore?
Aye.
Ms. Obig?
Aye.
Mr. Kalika?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Nay.
Mr. Nesgood?
Aye.
Mr. Sales?
Aye.
Ms. Skanky?
Nay.
Mr. Wilson?
Nay.
Okay, motion carries.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate you coming in, Ms. Brown. Thank you.
This is Rick DeBoer. May I ask a question?
Board made a decision. Yeah, a quick question.
Yeah. Well, with the letter of concern, then what happens at that point? The next letter of concern, you take my license away or what?
No, that will not happen.
A letter of concern is a non-disciplinary measure, Mr. DeBoer. It doesn't even show up on your license search.
Okay, just wanted to know, because I was reading what it said online, and I just wanted to make sure it wasn't the law was in regards to it. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Appreciate you calling in. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, all right. Mr. Hack, I think it's time. Let the roast begin. Appreciate you coming in. Have a seat.
I'm
jumping out of order just for you.
Appreciate
your time on the board, obviously. You're no longer distracted with monthly visits here and all that reading, but full-time soul surveying?
Not surveying, doing other things.
Okay, that's all right.
A lot of reading.
Good. Well, we have a plaque here for your time on the board. Yeah, I'm not sure. Is there a...
There's something written on there.
A lot of cords. Be careful.
This is in your recognition for service to the Board of Technical Registration as a professional land surveyor, surveying from March of 21 to June 22.
All righty.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. I enjoyed my time.
Thank you.
Flush the cords.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks for coming in.
All right. Thank you.
Display it proudly.
That's a nice hood ornament, too.
New guy can wear.
Yeah. Okay, I think we've got some consent items we could probably take care of.
On the phone, they got some people who have been waiting around, so I want to make sure that we take care of them.
Oh, okay.
So I have a Joanne Kazan.
Oh, that's right.
Hello.
She is on agenda item 7A1.
A1, right. Should we do, okay, I have to do them separately. Let's do 7A1. the synopsis of this complaint on March 22nd, 2022. The board opened a complaint alleging that respondent firm failed to comply with board order P21055. Board records show, make sure I got the right, no, I'm sorry. I jumped to the wrong. This is case number P22051 involving respondent Joanne Quizon. I hope I said that correctly. The synopsis of this complaint is on March 1st, 2022. The board received a complaint alleging that the respondent and the respondent firm offered to engage in the practice of architecture through respondent firm's website without registration with the board. Board records show no indication that either respondent or respondent firm have ever been registered with the board. Respondent firm's website lists the respondent as the principal architect of the respondent firm. The investigative conclusion is that the investigations resulted in a conclusion that the respondent may not have violated the Board's Practice Act. So there is a recommendation for dismissal of the complaint. Ms. Quizana, since you've called in, I want to give you a chance to share your position with this board, but there is a recommendation to dismiss the complaint.
I appreciate the recommendation given by the board. I am not practicing the profession at this point, and I do appreciate Ms. Crawford's recommendation regarding this case to be dismissed. Thank you.
Appreciate you calling in. So we do two motions here, one for the secondary investigation.
Yes, I actually am recommending something additional too. While I am recommending for dismissal of P22-051 and 052, I'm also recommending to open two complaints against the co-owners of the firm, and that would be Mr. J.D. Woods and Mr. Christopher Ontiveros. Just in regards to the non-registrant firm issue and the non-registrant advertisement.
Okay.
I have a question on that, the second part there. Reading in some of the information, it sounds like that did they take everything down from the websites and brochure stuff related to the non-registrant firm practicing?
Related to the two respondents, yes.
Oh, okay. Related to those two, so they're okay. All right.
And I have another just tangent question to this. When did Mr. Pierce become the principal architect of the firm?
He became the principal architect when they registered the firm, which was on April 29th, 2022.
So that's when 312 Architect and Design was registered with the board.
Correct, but the complaint came in prior to that.
Okay, gotcha. All right, thank you. So we'll split this into separate votes.
So you actually, 7A, 1 through 4, unless anybody wants to do anything other than dismiss, you could consent those four in one motion.
Okay. Do we have to do a separate motion to request staff to open up complaints? Or is that automatically part of the motion?
That would be different. That would be a separate motion from
The dismissals. Could they do two motions, one to the dismiss 7A1 through 7A4, and then another motion to open complaints against the two?
Or if we just took staff recommendation on 7A1, it includes both of those things. So if we did just accept all of the staff's recommendations, would that not automatically generate that?
No.
Okay, it's going to be cleaner to do
it. No. All right, let's split those up. Can I get a motion from the board to dismiss cases 7A1 through 7A4.
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. I'd like to make a motion to dismiss cases 7A, 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Can I get a second, please?
Second, Mike Kalika.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Kalika. All those in favor of the dismissal, please say aye.
Aye.
All right.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Stanky?
Aye.
And Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Thank you. We have a unanimous vote to dismiss cases 71 through 74. Now we need another motion to request staff to begin or open up complaints against the owners, J.D. Woods and Christopher Ontiveros. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Kalika. I'll make a motion to direct staff to open two complaints against Mr. J.D. Woods and Christopher Ontiveros, co-owners of 312 Architects and Designs.
Okay. Can I get a second?
I'll second. This is Jennifer Hobick.
Thank you. All those in favor, say aye.
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 And Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Nay.
Ms. Stanky?
Nay.
And Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Thank you. The vote, as I do the count.
The vote is successful.
It's successful. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Crawford. Okay, let's move on to 7B1. There's really nothing pursued here. Can I get up?
Say 7B1.
7B1. This complaint proposed for administrative closure without prejudice. This involves Mr. Padilla, who was a colorful past. Mr. Ream, do you want to just give a, and then we can do a motion, just a very brief summary?
Sure, and it's difficult to do it briefly, frankly, with Mr. Padilla. He's had a total of 23 cases before this board, four of which are still active. Three of those four were heard by the board just last month, at which time the board ordered those three cases, all of which were criminal, felonious criminal, referred to the Attorney General's Office, the Criminal Division, that will take place tomorrow. that leaves of the 23 just the case before you today. And this particular case involved the alleger essentially coming across a couple of legal descriptions that were recorded by Mr. Padilla at the Pima County Recorder's Office. And she didn't, and I spoke with her directly, she didn't really have that much of an interest other than bringing that to our attention. Because of the wisdom of the board as well as our executive management with respect to treating issues with Mr. Padilla as criminal, because the administrative approach simply didn't work with respect to him. We just weren't able to get anywhere. Frankly, in this case, the recommendation is to close it administratively without prejudice because of the act of three criminal cases that we're dealing with as criminal, and in this case, frankly, closing this without prejudice is, in my view, the appropriate way to handle this, and that's why I recommend it such.
Thank you. Was Mr. Padilla ever served? Did they ever find him?
No. The last attempt with respect to Mr. Padilla, actually, I asked the criminal or the civil division of the Pima County Sheriff's Department to attempt to locate and serve him. And I'll also mention there is also a misdemeanor criminal arrest warrant out of Pinal County for Mr. Padilla on one of our cases that hasn't been served, and that was 2 years ago that arrest warrant was issued. That has not been served, nor has the permanent injunction that was issued by Maricopa County Superior Court. That hasn't been served either. And essentially, the Pima County Sheriff's Department's process server concluded that Mr. Padilla was attempting to avoid service and had done so successfully, at which time they prepared an affidavit and returned it to me. So that's been the attempts to locate and serve him, all of which have been unsuccessful.
If I could just ask our legal counsel to just clarify what that's.
Yeah, just for the record, closure without prejudice, when you say without prejudice, it just means it can be reopened again at any time. So it's not a final determination, it's being closed, but you can reopen it later if you'd like.
If he's ever found or comes back. Great. Okay, thank you, Mr. Eve. All right, I'd like to get a motion. Regarding 7B1, a complaint, proposed for administrative closure without prejudice.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
This is Dr. Campbell. I'd like to make a motion reference 7B1 to propose administrative closure without prejudice, reference P22071, Carlos Padilla.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Can I get a second?
Second, my colleague.
Okay, we have a first and a second. All those present, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay, Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hovick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Stanky?
Aye.
And Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Thank you. We have a unanimous vote. Okay. I don't see anyone else except 71.
In both 71 and 71, it looks like they're available if you guys have any questions.
Well, let's just move on to 70. We might be able to make a motion to accept signed consent agreements. Does the board?
Mr. Chair. For 7E2, the consent agreement has been signed since.
Oh.
The date.
Could we make one motion then to accept all four?
Well, there's two.
That one, I guess, has been moved up to.
These are assigned already.
And then you were saying that.
Yeah, so 7D1, 2, and 3 have been signed, and since the agenda has been posted, 7E2 has been signed as well.
Oh, so it's E2, I'm sorry. Okay, yeah.
So if you list out the four case numbers that have signed consent, you can do that.
Okay, we have some signed consent agreements. We have four of them. For D1, D2, D3, and E2. Those are P22062. P22080, HI22036, in HI 23003. Can I get a motion to accept staff for the signed consent agreements?
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Kalief. I'll make a motion to accept the signed consent agreements for case P22-062, P22080, HI22-036, and HI23-003.
Okay, can I get a second, please?
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. I'll second that.
Thank you, Mr. Sales. Those present, please vote by saying in favor, by saying aye.
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 Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Stanky?
Aye.
Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, we have unanimous votes there.
Mr. Chair, if I may, just for procedurally, you may still wish to ask if there are any votes against.
Anyone opposed to this vote? Okay, hearing no one making a motion, we'll accept the vote to dismiss these complaints. Accept the signed consent agreements. Thank you. Okay, let's move on to 7E1. This case number P22064, respondents Brian Stoll. The synopsis of this complaint is on April the 7th, 2022, the board received a complaint alleging that respondent prepared to fraudulently seal structural design plans and calculations without registration with the board. It is further alleged that respondent fraudulently applied the seal and signature of Robert E. He's PE Civil, number 14401, on the Bowers residential project in Scottsdale. On or about November the 4th, 2021, the Kale residence project in Paradise Valley. And on or about August 16th, that occurred on August 16th, sorry. And then on the Tennyson residential project in Scottsdale, Arizona, on or about August 16th, 2021. The investigative conclusion that the investigation concludes that respondent may have violated board statutes ARS 32106-02A, ARS 32121, and ARS 32145-1, and that respondent may have practiced or opted to practice a board-regulated profession without board registration on six separate projects within Arizona. The investigation also concludes that respondent may have violated board statute ARS 32145-4, and that respondent may have used the registration of another on six separate projects within Arizona. Kurt, the ledger is available if we need him.
Apparently, if you would like me to give him a call, I can. But it looks like they only if you guys have questions. So.
Yeah, I was going to. Board members, do you have questions for Mr. Vallelonga? Hope I said that right.
I believe so.
It was his stamp that was used fraudulently. So if there's questions, we can call him in. Otherwise, this seems pretty straightforward. Any questions for the ledger from the board?
Nope.
If not, let's move on to a vote. We have a staff recommendation to offer a proposed consent agreement encompassing the following order. If not signed within 30 days, we go to hearing. Civil penalty in amount of $13,000. Cost investigation in amount of $209.
13,000?
Yes.
That's what it says here.
Yeah, that's...
It said 15, so...
Oh, no. 15's all right with me. Refer this case, and we will refer this case to the Attorney General's office for possible criminal prosecution. Any discussion by the board on this before we make a vote?
So just, is this two separate items we are proposing to, potentially proposing to send a letter and then also refer the case at the same time? Or do we...
No, this is just to... Go ahead.
Well, yeah, this would be to offer a proposed consent agreement first, and then I would recommend doing the second one. Referring a case wouldn't necessarily be a motion. It would be staff direction to refer the case to the AG's office, but the first part would be the motion regarding whether or not to offer a proposed consent agreement.
Okay. Can I get a motion to that staff recommendation?
Mr. Chair, this is Scott Sales. I propose to offer a consent agreement for the civil penalty in the amount of $13,000 and the cost of investigation in the amount of $209 for case P22-064, item 7E1 on the agenda.
Can I get a second, please?
Bill Nesgood, a second, Matt.
Okay, we have a first and a second. All those present, please vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Stanky?
Aye.
And Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Thank you.
If you don't mind me adding
something. Anybody opposed by chance? Hearing none, we'll accept a unanimous vote.
I apologize, but do we need it to be part of the motion that it go to a hearing if not signed in 30 days?
Well, we're going to make that a separate recommendation for Mr. Donald's recommendation.
Well, that would be a staff direction regarding referring the matter to the AG's office for a criminal prosecution.
Right.
I think what Investigator Carthel is referring to would be if this consent agreement is not accepted in a certain number of days, does the board then want the case to automatically proceed for an administrative hearing, or does the board want it to come back before the board again to then be referred out for a hearing?
Yeah, I apologize, Mr. Chair. I was understanding the second part of this thing differently than that there. So I guess I could propose again or amend.
Amend it.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'd like to amend the previous proposal that if the proposed consent agreement is not signed within 30 days, it proceeds to a hearing.
Okay.
As opposed to going to referral to the Attorney General's office.
No, that's different.
Yeah, that's different.
Okay.
Yeah. That's where I got it all messed up.
Gotcha.
So the motion is we offer the proposed consent agreement, and if not signed in 30 days, we go to hearing.
Yeah. And then would the initial second amend the second to incorporate that?
So, Mr. Nisku?
Second, there.
Okay, we'll have a first and a second, and we'll redo the vote. All those present in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Stanky?
Aye.
And Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Okay, if anybody opposed? Hearing none, I think we have a unanimous vote to accept that recommendation. Thank you. Okay.
Do you need the board? We need the board to direct staff.
So.
For the criminal.
Yes. Should we assume then, Mr. Chair, is the board giving direction to board staff to refer this matter to the criminal division of the Attorney General's office for possible prosecution?
Yeah, I think our motion was to approve the staff recommendation, but for the sake of the record, I think we would want to direct staff to refer this to the Attorney General's office for possible criminal prosecution.
So we wouldn't wait for 30 days for that to be signed. No, that would do that. That would still be a whole separate.
Yeah.
So you can do that right now.
Okay. Okay, this is the next item is 7F1. I need to recuse myself. Mr. Kalika, do you want to take this on?
Absolutely. So next agenda item, 7F1, This is in regards to Catherine Mills, professional engineer civil, license number 3118.
Thank you.
Synopsis of the complaint. On March 7th, 2022, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent, after being paid $2,250 on or about December 31st, 2021, for percolation tests and septic design plans for a residential project at 39339 North 21st Avenue in Phoenix, failed to complete the test and failed to deliver any design plans to the client. It is further alleged that the respondent has failed to communicate with the client after repeated attempts to contact the respondent, as noted in Attachment 1. And it would appear that the staff recommendation is asking board staff for guidance, as this case may not constitute gross negligence as alleged. However, respondent's repeated pattern of lack of communication with their clients and lack of corrective action from the respondent has been an ongoing issue. So,
certainly, this case does mirror prior cases involving the same respondent, and the board on two occasions directed staff to prepare a letter of concern specific to that issue with regard to communicating effectively with clients. Because of those two occasions, that frankly hasn't changed anything, and we have this third case that it didn't rise to the level of gross negligence discharge, so that element isn't, the facts and circumstances don't support that. However, it was just concerning in and of itself that despite previous attempts by the board to correct this particular issue, it's resurfaced once again.
Any comments from the board or anyone on the phone? Is there anyone on? I don't think anyone's on the phone or here for this case, so open up to any comments.
Just that, you know, I know there's been a history on this, but I mean, the standard practice it seems to be the sending the letter, just like all the others, and going down that route. So I'd like to hear if anybody else has any other thoughts, opinions on it.
If there's no comments, any other discussion from anyone on the phone, I'd like to call for a motion. It sounds like it would be a motion to issue a letter of concern.
So, can I ask a question? So, Greg, is this the third letter of concern?
This would constitute the third. There have been two prior which were the same issue. So this would be the third.
Would a consideration of something like a letter of reprimand, or like the lowest, where no fees or anything involved, might be considered? I'm just adding.
One thought is that we would issue a third letter of concern, and then if there's still issues beyond that, we elevate it to the next one, unless the board wished to elevate it now as opposed to then. We don't have a specific recommendation, really, guidance from staff on this, so.
Yeah, there's no, like, history of what we've done in the past on these types of things. Normally they've been responded. So on the other ones that are open, they've just not responded at all then? Just no coordination, any responses, so they're all just outstanding letters of concern on the other items?
The previous two. Although there is a subsequent case, but it's early on in the investigation.
A letter of reprimand would be the lowest level of disciplinary action at this point, since a letter of concern is not. Sure. So, is there any interest from any of the board members to?
Well, there is one threshold question, though. If the board is considering moving from a non-disciplinary to a disciplinary resolution, the board would have to be able to enunciate a specific statute or rule being violated, a specific act that was taken, and then how that act constituted a specific violation of that statute or rule. So the board can go to a non-disciplinary resolution where there hasn't been a violation. If the board were to go for a disciplinary resolution, though, they would have to be able to enunciate the actual violation underlying the disciplinary action.
Which staff has indicated is not something that has been identified here. So to your point, we would be hard-pressed to elevate that without something more concrete.
There would have to be some basis for it to move into the disciplinary role.
Well, it sounds like we need to stay with the original course, which was a third letter of concern, which is concerning. Any other discussion?
Dr. Campbell. In some of the other board actions that I've taken part in with another board that I serve on, part of the professional conduct elements of professional practice cover that if we were to decide to move with that next step up in some fashion of progressive discipline, would we be able to cite the professional conduct statute as the basis for the perceived violation?
Well, there's an aspect to that that I would want to caution about. I would caution against wanting to progress with discipline and then looking for a basis for the discipline. Rather, the board would want to look at the professional standards and decide if there's been a violation of them, and if so, then move into discipline. But looking for a basis to move from non-disciplinary to disciplinary can become problematic for a variety of reasons. I can't speak to the professional standards of various professions. That is one of the issues we run into. We need to have members of the board or committees who are able to speak to professional standards. So I don't know whether or not this would constitute a potential violation of a professional standard. I'm not aware off the top of my head of one that it would, but that doesn't mean there isn't one. If the board felt there may be a potential violation, the board could refer it for further investigation, but the only real avenue that way would be through the EAC, in which case there would be other professionals reviewing it to see if it met their professional standards criteria. Beyond that, I don't know that I would necessarily look for a basis, but rather if it's possible there have been violations, I would refer it back for investigation by professionals to see if the entire course of work met professional standards, and then see what determination the EAC or investigators
come up with. So based on that, would then the board be interested in possibly directing staff to provide additional investigation in this case, or do we just want to stick with a letter, a third letter of concern?
This is Kent Wilson. I mean, my sense from reading it and reading through the case is that I think a third path is warranted, which may be what Dr. Kamer was getting at, which is I think we do move to a letter of reprimand.
I think the concern there is that there isn't specifically a rule or statute that has been identified as being violated. So in order to raise it to that level, we would need to cite a specific rule or statute in order to do that, which we have not done. However, we could direct staff to continue to investigate this and potentially open up the EAC to identify if such a rule or statute has been violated. But right now, we don't have that in front of us to be able to take that action right now. So if you wanted to make a motion to direct staff to provide that level of investigation, we could do that in addition to a third letter of concern.
And so, actually, I'm Greg, you correct me if I'm wrong here on this, but do you want to re-articulate why it didn't take that path in the first place? Because I think you did, but...
Well, with respect to the letter of concern issue, I'm not sure. I think I'm missing something.
No, the staff's recommendation was for a letter of concern, but also indicated that the lack of communication with the client didn't rise to the level of gross negligence. But the question is staff, would there be a need to investigate to see if there's potentially something there that would be a violation of the statute rule? not saying that there is.
All right, I need to fix the first part of it. A letter of concern actually wasn't recommended, and I didn't do that simply because it had been done two times previously.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I did not identify any specific board practice statute that I could present to justify perhaps a disciplinary action, and as such, that's why it was agendized for board guidance. I don't have that. Certainly, if directed, I'm happy to do further research with respect to the Board Practice Act issues to determine whether, in fact, one is specific to what's taking place here.
Also, Greg, I'm assuming this initially went to assessors looked at it. Oh, it didn't.
No. It didn't, because on the allegation was specific to gross negligence, and the facts and circumstances didn't support that to begin with. It wasn't enough to even send it for purposes of assessment. The facts just didn't support it. That was the compelling issue I had with the case to begin with.
So in that regard, rather than an EAC, if you felt you wanted it looked into a little bit further, we could ask your investigations to have two professionals assess the complaint and then bring it back.
What's board's thoughts on that?
This is Kent Wilson. Does the fact that there are a number of previous allegations that indicate a pattern matter?
Well, the previous issues have likewise involved conduct that did not constitute a violation of any specific statute or rule, but which potentially created the basis for a letter of concern by the board expressing concern about how the individual was operating their business. So this isn't a repetitive course of action that would, through repetition, would move into the disciplinary realm or something that indicates conduct necessarily flying too close on something that could be construed as a violation. It seems to be a course of action that in the past was found not to be a potential violation, and it's simply repetitive ongoing conduct. Now, that said, if the board were interested in pursuing further investigation, it would certainly be fine for the board to recommend sending the file back for an investigator to evaluate whether or not there are any potential violations of board statutes or rules. I would caution the board against referring it for any specific directed investigation. Rather, I would recommend for the board to take that course of action. Legally, the best course would be for the board to refer it back for an investigator to review the file to see if there are any potential violations. And a professional in the area then would be able to review it and see if there was something that could constitute a violation of professional standards. But it would be open for them to review the entire file for potential violations.
Any thoughts on proceeding that way?
This is Kent Wilson again. I do worry that referring it back to investigation based on the context of this discussion might kind of spoil the results, like as if,
right.
You know, it seems like we're pursuing something.
Right. My personal opinion is to issue another letter of concern at this time. But if there's additional action that we want to take, discuss that. Any other discussion? If not, I'll take a motion to issue a letter of concern.
This is Dr. Campbell. I'd like to make a motion that we move forward with case P22053 and issue a letter of concern to Catherine Mills.
Campbell, do we have a second?
Oh, sorry.
Second, Mr. Nesbitt. All those here in the room in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any in the room opposed? All right, on the phone, if we go, Dr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Nay.
Ms. Skanky?
Aye.
Mr. Wilson?
Nay.
What's our tally there, Kurt?
So, motion passes.
Six to two.
Okay,
thank you. Jack, back over to you, sir.
Did. Thank you.
Hi, this is Stacy Skanky. I'm going to need to leave now, so okay. For the record.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. 7G, review and consideration for EAC membership. We got two volunteers, which is always great. Mr. Haas, Mr. Cato, I need to recuse myself from 7G2, so we can do separate motions. So has anybody got questions about the membership, their interest, and the credentials presented? We just need to talk about 7G1 first, Mr. Haas.
I was looking through for 7G1 for Mr. Haas, and I didn't see a lot in there for like a resume and anything to kind of back up experience or anything in there. It was a very short letter without looking at any outside things, which I did not. That's you got the phone, please.
Mr. Haas is available for any questions over the phone if you have any specific questions.
Oh, okay. Guess we could call them up unless anybody wants to make a motion on something or other before that.
Deb, you guys do some research on this guy?
When I looked through CRM, there was one complaint. There was a consent agreement back in 2020. He has completed everything from that consent agreement. And I attached that consent agreement to the packet.
Saw that there.
Any board members have any other concerns about Mr. Haas' interest to be an EAC member? Okay. I think staff always appreciates getting some more registrants to be EAC members, getting that knowledge base to help us out. In consideration of that, can I get a motion to either make a recommendation to accept Mr. Haas for EAC membership?
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Clayton. I'll make a motion to accept Mr. Haas for potential membership on the Enforcement Advisory Committee membership.
We have a motion. Can I get a second, please?
Yep, Kent Wilson will second.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. All those attending, please give a vote in favor by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Mr. Campbell?
Aye.
Ms. Hobick?
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren?
Aye.
Ms. Stanky?
She left.
Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Thank you. Anybody wanting to change their vote? Any nays? Very good. Okay, we have a new EAC member, and I'm going to recuse myself from 7G2, Mr. Kalika.
All righty. And we're looking at Mr. Ron Taylor, civil engineer, license number 72726, also looking for consideration on the EAC.
Mr. Taylor's on the phone if you would like to. If you have any questions, or if I'm not sure if you would like to say anything.
Mr. Taylor, can you hear me?
I can. How are you guys?
Good. Would you give us just a real quick little synopsis as to your interest on being on the EAC?
Of course. I was on the EAC a number of years ago, before the housing market crashed and my business went under, and I moved to New Mexico and was not able to fulfill the responsibilities. I've been in Arizona practicing engineering continuously since 1985, and basically I would just like to give back to the profession. You're welcome.
Mr. Acting Chair, I'd like to propose to approve Ron Tyler as the for EAC membership.
Thank you, Mr. Sills. We have a second.
A second.
Thank you, Mr. Nesbitt. Any further discussion? All right. Those in the room, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposition in the room? Okay. Dr. Campbell.
Aye.
Ms. Hobick.
Aye.
Ms. Lindgren.
Aye.
Mr. Wilson.
Aye.
Great. Motion passes. Welcome aboard, Mr. Taylor. We appreciate your volunteering and look forward to welcoming you on the EAC.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be of service.
Thank you. Jack, back to you.
Okay. We're on to the good stuff, the director's report. Do we need to take a break? Is everybody good?
Look at me.
How's that long? You can't do it in the restroom.
I know. All right. Ms. Stapley.
All right. So I know it's late, so we'll talk fast. Let's see. Okay. So you may or may have not noticed that depending on how riveted you are by the financials each month, I don't have the normal reports. This is... July is what's referred to as the 13th month, and I know this is August actually, but they haven't had a hard close yet, and the system that's referred to as AFIS, I didn't even know what that stood for, I had to ask, Arizona Financial Information System, so they couldn't run the usual reports, and I said, that's okay. We did receive our new fiscal appropriation of $2,641,000. The increase, there was a little bit of an increase to cover some things that I had to ask about too. I said, what does this cover exactly? Increases in HRAS and a lot of the state systems and rent. Rent went up significantly. That was interesting. A little bit of a shocker about that. I can tell you that I have reached out to the director of OSPB, which is the Office of Strategic Budget Planning, to ask for our budget to be front-loaded, or basically to, what they do is with your appropriated funds, you're allowed to use a quarter of it each quarter, so 25% of it. But the problem with that is when the first quarter hits and the new fiscal year hits and everybody wants, like, boom, I want your rent payment in full for the whole year. Our e-licensing system, they want their whole enchilada. You know, everybody
pay the
wants...
whole year in advance?
Yeah. And so when a lot of the things, I mean, we have an internal agreement to pay for our legal counsel. They were willing to break that up into quarterly payments for us. I mean, if everybody wants payment in full for the whole year, obviously you're not left with enough funds to just cover your operating expenses, payroll, things like that. Yeah, so we're waiting to hear back. I don't know why they wouldn't do that. It's fairly common to have that asked. And just basically, so like, well, could you please give us 30% of our budget the first quarter, and then 25%, 25%, 20%, because everything you don't use in any quarter rolls over to the next quarter until the end of the fiscal year.
Why on earth can they do rent payments based on a quarterly basis then?
Seriously,
at the very least.
How many times have I
like... annual, like, here's your
up front?
It's, yeah. I guess it has something to do with the fact that this is where leasing to own.
This is not a state-owned building,
right.
And so we think that might be
perfect. So this is a lease-to-own building?
I think all of the rent that goes here pays for a mortgage.
I think it was back in 2008 when they sold
the
state buildings and ran out of money.
And anyway, I think they're trying to get some back.
So I'm curious, what about Mr. Harris's fees? Is that covered by the state?
Well, that's
office?
A whole other discussion.
All right, forget
it. We should not agendize for it.
Scott just pulled out his kennel prod.
Just as a reminder, we don't have non-appropriated funds. We don't take any funds from the general fund. We're a 90-10 agency. We're self-funded from the registration fees, and the state takes 10% of our revenue off the top and puts it into the general fund. I like to just throw that out there as a reminder. And there are no free lunches. Pay rent and everything else. Unless you hang out with Bill. Okay, digitization. We are finally done, and I'm just so grateful that whole project was able to be concluded last fiscal year. Maybe it was a blessing in disguise that we weren't able to start our online transition just yet, so that we could get all of that in order and work on cleaning up the data as much as possible so that things will migrate well and transition. And as we were getting near the end of August, I was kind of panicking on where's the last bill, because if you may recall, I had to ask for the appropriated funds from FY22 to give for them to give us an extension to pay out of those funds, even though the ICM solutions, their Microfresh document reader, broke. They couldn't get replacement. You know, just yeah, a lot of fun things like that. So that all did finish. The purchase orders are in. Everything's been signed. We should be good. Online transition. We had our project investment justification approved. Kurt and I had a first kickoff meeting about a week ago, and we're in the planning stage. We met with our staff last Friday to just kind of let everybody know this is a huge project that's starting, and how important it is to have their input and the user acceptance testing and all of the ins and outs and additional time constraints that will go with the online system. But it will be worth it. So. Board facilities. Well, thank you to Water Resources for still letting us borrow their room. If you haven't stopped to buy our boardroom lately, you really should. Our actual boardroom on the second floor, it's looking very good. I think I kind of reported the same thing last month. It's basically done. The doors are on back order. They're supposed to come in October. We still don't have our board member table because that came, but it was wrong. So they're fixing that and redoing that. Very grateful and appreciative for the Director of Pharmacy Board, Clean Elections, and Criminal Justice Commission. We worked it all out. We don't think we'll have any conflicts with being able to share that with everybody, and that way we can share the rent on that space too. And then the smaller boardroom that we also have gone in with, it does have doors. So our Laws and Rules Committee meeting coming up in a couple of weeks, we can use that room because all of the Water Resources rooms are already booked. The downside is still the technology. The vendor situation is so horrible. It got to be where they couldn't even give us an estimate. And so Artisan is the facilitator of the technology, all the, you know, the camera, the mics, everything that needs to go in. They found another vendor. You know, we're kind of at the mercy of, are they on a state contract? Does everybody approve? We think this is going to go through, and Kurt, tell me if I'm wrong, but I believe it might be January. We might have some actual technology, not our little handheld recorders. Does that sound about right?
Sounds about right.
Did I miss anything?
Think so. We're just going to be waiting on technology for some time.
Yeah. So we needed a place for the to proctor the ASBOG geologist exam coming up the beginning of October, and there isn't another large room, and you have to separate everybody, and so far there's like 24 people signed up. So we talked with General Services Division, our construction project manager, everybody on the second floor. And because we have no doors, so we're going to put huge signs in the hallway, testing in progress, please be quiet. We made sure they're not going to be working on the elevators or the HVAC or coming through the ceiling tiles or the cabling or anything else that's been going on pretty much every day. So we think that we can do it.
A lot of some decorative beads.
Yes, you are now the first person to suggest we hang beats. We might. okay, so really excited. We have three new staff members. A licensing specialist, Natalie Lopez, an accounting specialist, Linda Kapek, and sitting right there in the corner, very conspicuously, is Brandon Eden, who comes to us from the Nursing Care Administrators Board as our newest investigator with a great deal of board experience, many, many years working, assisting in investigations for Tempe Police Department, and also has a unique perspective with alarm companies that will come in very handy, I'm sure, as we, if, when we ever get to create a rule package and improve that. So we're super excited. And he's used to enduring long meetings, so
yeah.
This is nothing.
Welcome aboard.
Board composition, I've been actively communicating with boards and commissions. I believe we seriously will have a land surveyor by next month. The public member position, I have had people apply, and Bill's been hustling. He's helping us. You know, you guys get your friends, you know, retired neighbors. We need a public member. If everybody knows somebody, have them give me a call and I will talk them into applying. Anyway.
Has anyone applied for the public member position?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Yes. But that doesn't, you know,
yeah.
We have to get the right person for them to give the nod to. So we have our licensing numbers here. Thank you to Julie, our licensing manager, and Orlean for the enforcement numbers. And you have enforcement numbers on steroids this month because Hayden did a whole bunch more research and helping gather more information, preparing for some speaking assignments coming up. So he's done a lot of research there, just giving you a lot to look at. Does anybody, I don't know if you're probably tired, have any questions on any of that? You know what, I think I really like these numbers, and if there's anything any board members would like to see additionally that we can run reports on, we're happy to do that.
This is real nice.
I
like the new addition of seeing some of the other information just all in one easily digestible bite on these graphs and charts and things.
Right. I appreciate that as well. It helps keep things in perspective. But it's kind of funny, depending on how you present the information. There was one graph, what was it, Hayden, where it made geologists kind of look terrible, but actually it was just funny.
That.
It was
yeah.
just because they'd had like two complaints in
5 years.
Both
of them went to
this the way it graphed it out, it just didn't look right. I go, let's don't use this one. So, it's interesting. Anyway. Okay, let's see, was that it for the director's report? I think that's it. No questions on anything else? Let's see. All right, I guess I'm good, Mr. Chair.
Okay, board chair's report. We got took care of Mr. Hack. Mr. Donald, do you have anything to share with the board?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, standing committee reports.
So our next legislation and rules committee meeting is September 2nd. And all of us collectively together, we have been working a lot. Kurt's done some really extensive background work on statute revisions, and so has Hayden. Hayden created a spreadsheet. We were looking at engineering definitions all over the whole country, and what else? I know. Every time I'm like, hey, can you see if, you know, whatever it is.
We were playing around trying to figure out, like, the definitions with the disciplines or not.
Yeah, because of, you know, the whole discipline-specific thing that I'm talking about for quite some time. So that's going to be huge. I don't know how that is going to go. And my only tone of frustration is that typically when you start diving in to statutes, the discussions are very, to me, they're very interesting, very important, but very lengthy. And I fear we may not get as far through all of what I'd like to, you know, on that meeting on the second. But whatever we have that's productive, we plan on bringing back in September for board review. And so if any board members have any suggestions or things that they would like, you know, please email them to, I guess I'd say email them to Kurt, copy me in, or Kurt and Hayden, or all of us, you know, it'll get to all of us eventually, so let us know.
I would say it might take more than one L&R committee.
I know, the problem is we're running out of time. I mean, we're running out of time if the board chooses to try to get something, you know, a bill in place for the next legislative session. So we may, if that's something that the board would like to do, directs me to do, we may need to be choosy.
I think we need to. Based on the discussion this morning,
yeah.
And we definitely need to.
I think that we felt, I think actually even before the whole board changed out pretty much, except for Jack, that was an item of discussion. It's just that getting members of the legislature to talk to you and help propose something meaningful and helpful that, you know, promotes the mission of the board and to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the public, and all of that. So we'll just we'll work on it, bring something back, and then HIRSC committee meeting is the 7th. Wow.
I think that's the 5th.
I thought, yeah. I'm like, that's wow, really close. And hoping that at that committee meeting that. The rule package that basically is been, I think it's been finalized. It's just that we needed, sorry, not the rule package, but the updates to the standards of practice, that they will have taken it back to Arizona ASHI to have them approve it one final time, because they did all that and then they brought up more changes. So
before that meeting, we'll be contacting Robert Skaggs, verifying that yes, it's been adopted, and then hopefully we'll, you know, we hopefully can then move forward with our rule package that can be viewed by the board.
Is there any benefit, Judith, to encouraging an HI or a home inspector to be a public member?
So we've done that. That was one of the first things I did when I went last year, and they did apply. Great minds. And the boards and commissions made it clear to them that there was no statute or mechanism to have them appointed to a board seat. And I said, respectfully, there is no mechanism or statute in place that says they can't be. So sorry, we're off topic. Okay. So but that is part of our proposed statutory changes. You'll see that, to have a seat at the table. So, okay.
Judith, I sent you a topic of conversation for the LNR.
Oh, good. Okay, excellent. Thank you. As far as association information, ASBOG, our geologist association, so I already mentioned our staff is scheduled to proctor the very last paper and pencil exam is October 7th. The first computer-based testing exam will be administered March 17th, 2023, at which point there will be no paper or pencil exams any longer. So I think of all the associations and all the professions, the only pencil and paper that remains still is a structural engineering exam with NCWS, and that is set to move in 23 as well. So that's huge. For the geologists, testing locations with the new CBT exams will be offered in Phoenix, Goodyear, Tempe, Tucson, Yuma, and Flagstaff. So that's a lot of testing locations. And the annual business meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, October 25th in North Carolina. architects, landscape architects, sorry, landscape architects, Barb, Jack, you want to say anything?
We had a regional seminar a couple of weeks ago, and most of, not a whole lot to report. A lot of the states are working on updating their qualifications for licensure based on education and experience. Arizona's, we're not changing. We have no reason to change as far as I'm concerned, but then there's a lot of discussion involving what the other states are doing. We broke out into regions, and we just heard updates for the most part. It wasn't all that informative. Nothing earth-shattering came about. There's a lot of discussion about getting ready for the national convention in September in Omaha. So there'll be more voting that I can share at that time. But yeah, not anything substantial came out this last session.
Okay, and NCARB for the architects. One thing that, you know, we had spoken before about the mutual recognition agreement with the United Kingdom. There was a lot of discussion on that. They did ratify that at their annual business meeting, and it's expected to go into effect spring of 2023, which should be very beneficial to a lot of architects, actually. So that's a good thing. Even though the Western region was still kind of just wanting more discussion on that, because it requires the lab accredited degree only to do the mutual recognition. Julie's looking at me. Like, what? So anyway, they reached out to all the jurisdictions. They wanted to know if this mutual recognition agreement would have any impact on our board or our state in particular. And Julie and I talked about it and responded back. We didn't believe there'd be any issues with Arizona's ability to grant registration to individuals who obtained their council record with NCARB via the MRA with the United Kingdom, because basically we don't really recognize agreements or accords. And since reciprocity and comity, we had that legislation that went through the House and the Senate in 2019 and then was vetoed by the governor. Hopefully we can incorporate that back in. But yeah, right now we don't have any of those. So, but I don't think it's going to have any negative impact on our jurisdiction. So, okay. Anything else, Mike?
No, I think you fit it on the head. It's a relatively quiet summer.
I have some other statistics I'm going to skip, folks. We're late. So NCWS, Engineering and Land Surveyors. So it was interesting that we did contribute to the professional engineering plumbing exam because it did get enough interest from enough states, and they are going to talk about it. And let's see, prerequisites for offering the exam have been reviewed and verified by the Committee on Examinations for Professional Engineers. Final authorization will be evaluated during the PE mechanical professional activities at this conference this week. And then they're also doing a lot to promote surveying licensure. As you know, I've mentioned before, land surveyors are on the decline because the vast majority are over age 60, and we need to promote land surveying. So they're looking, they have some discretionary grant funding that can be used to develop university surveying or geomatics programs, and they're hoping that that will be beneficial to grow the profession. So, is there anything else you want to talk about, Scott?
Other than the conferences this week from Tuesday through Friday, so I know I'll have a lot more to speak on next month about things that they're going to inform us about during this conference. So there'll be, should be representatives from most every state there. We'll see. That's all I got right now.
Okay, great. So I think that's it for associations. And our next board meeting is scheduled September 27th.
In this room again?
If we have a desk or a board member table, we might be able to meet. It is scheduled for here right now. We might be able to meet in our new boardroom.
And we'll see how things develop, and because right now there's no agenda out there or anything like that. But we do have it scheduled here on the calendar just in case, so we have to move if we need it.
Yeah.
And then future topics, after Scott and I talked about the traffic engineering thing, would you like that to be agendized next month to review if the board wants to submit another letter possibly or not?
Yeah.
Traffic engineering?
Yeah, I had no problem with that. We rely heavily on our traffic engineers. Yeah. Alejandro will be all over that.
He'll be at the Laws and Rules, right? Yeah.
Oh, good.
Alejandro is in Illinois.
Yeah.
Well, I have another topic for a suggestion. I've been contacted by a friend who owns a business that does aerial drones. He's going to be sending you guys a letter. I said, a lot of stuff I can't officially respond to, but I said, fire off a letter to the board regarding interpretations, clarifications on when can drones be used for different kinds of surveying services.
That's a topic of mine.
The technology has evolved exponentially on what these things can do. So this guy works a lot with a lot of surveyors, engineering companies, construction general contractors, and he doesn't want to get into conflict with the board. So he's trying to be proactive and saying, well, how far can I push this service? So I said, couldn't answer that one. So he's going to fire off a letter. I suggested that this might be a topic for discussion. We'll have a new surveyor hopefully on the board next month. We'll blast through with that.
It's definitely a topic for discussion. I mean, not, yeah, I know. Know what you think of Scott. But,
and the construction staking, yeah.
Everything that you said. Yeah.
That's it for me. Any other topics? Okay. Anything else we need to go over before we adjourn? Seeing none, let's bang the gavel. Thanks, everybody, for your attendance this morning.
Thank you.
See you next month. We got great donuts. You guys need to show up.
Recording stopped.
Just in time.
That made it as fast. That's good.